welcome to the Happy Rant podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and fresh off the road, Ronald J. Martin. Big R, you are the world traveler, man. I tell you, you're everywhere. How was the trip, baby? I'm not on Instagram, so I wasn't privy to like the magazine version of the trip. I want to hear it right from you.
Baby, it was good. It was 7 days in beautiful downtown hippie county of the world, Asheville, North Carolina. Now, I didn't say hipster. It's actually more hippie than hipster. And
baby, will you suss that out for me? Like the subtleties and the differences between hippies and hipsters.
There's not a lot. It really just comes down to the fact that, you know, hippies are going to wear different things than hipster. But at the end of the day, I think the principles and the values are almost identical. That's what I'm kind of trying, you know, I'm getting to that.
The smugness and the self-awareness is the same then?
You know what? That's actually a good qualification, Big T. I think a hippie would lack some of the smugness that a hipster would have, but you got to remember, like hippies are old and hipsters are young and pretentious.
Yeah, I always associated hippies with being more inclusive, where they were like, "Yeah, man, come on, everybody's welcome." Whereas hipsters are much more exclusive, and they want to be, you know. They sort of cynically exclude those who aren't like them.
Yeah, and I think that's right. So I guess what I'm saying is if you're in Asheville, North Care, what you're finding is a weird, diverse mix of both like old, dying hippies and like young, pretentious, intolerable hipsters.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. I'm gonna be honest, I kinda like old hippies.
Oh yeah. They're great. We have a ton in Nashville because we have a ton of hipsters as well. But it's like all the guys who were roadies and involved in the music industry in the, you know, the 60s and 70s. They're still around and they have, you know, the long hair. And it's like hippie with a redneck twist.
Yeah.
They're great guys. Tons of fun and super laid back and easy to get along with. Hipsters are whatever the opposite of that is.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess that's – I wish they'd all go away. But, yeah, I don't really like either, you know, because I feel like hipsters are just the new version of where hippies started. And hippies just ended up being, you know, like the corporate, you know, just monsters. And hipsters are just going to end up there one day. They just don't know it yet. So I wish everybody would just like kind of grow up really quickly and be who they're going to be so that I can eat my quinoa in peace.
Baby, that's fascinating. You want to reclaim quinoa for yourself, don't you?
You know what? You can have it.
It's all yours.
You know, I'm not gonna lie about that, boys. I mean, I want to eat what I want to eat. If I want to eat a kale shake, I'm gonna have a kale shake. But I don't want to have to identify with a particular people group over it, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Hipsters as a people group again, Pipe. We brush up against this topic, but boys, we are as we often do here on this program. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We have some business to take care of. One item of business being again me promoing live in Louisville. Which is happening the weekend of October 23. And Pipe, you have a couple of sponsors to tell us about. So take it away, Ben.
Yes, we do have a couple of sponsors. So the first is Waterbrook Multnomah. They have sponsored us a few times before, so big thanks to them. They are highlighting a new book from Mark Batterson called Chase the Lion. Last week, I think it was, we talked about In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day. I guess now we're chasing that lion because we didn't take care of him in the pit on the snowy day. The whole idea being that too often we live by fear, we're marked by fear instead of taking on large challenges. And the premise of the book being that if a dream or a vision that you are pursuing is small enough for you to handle yourself, it's too small. It needs to be something that you need God to accomplish. And so the whole book is around that premise. If you're familiar with Batterson's ministry and some of the things that they've done in DC, you'll see some of that at play. I know that we've actually gotten some criticism for featuring Batterson books on the podcast because there are those who are not fans of his book, The Circle Maker. It has a touch of name it, claim it in it. But a lot of his ministry stuff and the way that they pray through things and they pursue vision and they expand and they take on new challenges is something that I think a lot of churches could actually learn from. And so the book is Chase the Lion. It is available. I think it's available the day this podcast drops. So check that book out. Brand new from Mark Batterson. The other sponsor was that?
The next book will be called Market the Lion.
Eat the Lion, Skin the Lion.
That's right. Sell the Line.
What's I feel like Chase the Lion is an interesting title because it's a little bit like a dog chasing a car. Like, what do you do when you catch the lion?
Yeah, exactly. Have we seriously gotten beef from people, R.E. Batterson?
Only a little. Okay. I mean, and I would expect that because any book we promo, somebody's going to not like. And so, and you know, unless it's like J.I. Packer or Jerry Bridges, nobody dislikes those guys. But
dude, let me be clear. I don't care where the money comes from. Okay?
And I'll say this to listeners.
This is a business. It's a cold, hard, it's a cash.
No, Pipe's right, though. We have turned down books, haven't we, B-Pipe?
We have turned down a couple books as sponsors because, you know, even we have limits. You know,
including a couple of our own.
It doesn't matter where the money comes from unless they're just overt heretics, in which case we'll turn it down.
That's true.
If they're maybe heretics, we're totally cool with it.
Absolutely.
Second sponsor is Logos again, recently released Logos 7, their most recent and updated version. So we've talked in previous episodes about a lot of their features. There really isn't another resource out there for Bible teachers and serious Bible studiers like Logos in terms of the full suite of tools, the way that you can integrate all of your resources, your original languages, your sermon preparation, books, including, you know, just Christian books in general, commentaries, they have it all in there. So if you're studying a passage, it will pull all of the pertinent sections of those into a library that you can look through instead of having to go hunt for it. So in terms of quotes, comments, commentaries, lexicons, all of those things, they're all right there. You can do all of your message preparation right in there. So it's especially aimed at pastors. But I think it would be great for, I know people who use it in grad school for helping with theology papers and things like that. So Logos 7 recently released. You can check that out. Go to logos.com/happyrant and then use the code happyrant at checkout, and you'll actually get Spurgeon's commentary on Philippians for free. If you choose to purchase one of their packages, you'll get that for free with the purchase. If you go to that link, logos.com/happyrant, or use the code Happy Rant at checkout. So thanks to our sponsors. Thanks for making us rich and powerful and wealthy. Someday we won't need you, but we still do. So thank you.
Well said.
Well said, man. And powerful. And you know why we're able to speak freely on this program, boys? It's because this is a safe place for us. I want to talk about safe places.
Should we provide a trigger warning to our listeners before we go into this, though?
We should. And Pipe, I want you to give the warning, okay?
I think the warning, I'm going to try to cover all my bases here. If sarcasm offends you, if angry collegiate sports logos offend you.
If they scare you, if they threaten you.
That's right, if you feel threatened by them. If hypersensitive philosophy professors are something that may get on your nerves or offend you. If the city of Chicago offends you. If conservatives or liberals offend you. You may want to tune out for this section. Just skip ahead a little bit. Although, if sarcasm offends you, this may not be the place for you. You may need to go find your own safe place.
Pipe, now listen, man. I got to come clean here. I try really, really hard week in and week out because I'm a radio pro to not like swear like a dock worker on this program, right? Sometimes I want to. I'll be honest, and sometimes certain topics make me feel that way, and this is one of those topics. I'm just going to set this thing up, boys, and I want to hear you riff on it. So I'm on the Washington Post. The headline is this: Iowa professor thinks Hawkeye's mascot is too mean looking.
it's a bird.
You guys, this is like a freaking Portlandia sketch, if there ever was one. Right? This is like straight out of Women and Women First bookstore, if you're familiar with that sketch on Portlandia. So here's what happened for real. And a friend of mine shot me this link to Twitter last week. So there was a professor at Iowa who, footnote, is right out of this kind of professor central casting. So you can envision in your mind what that looks like.
It doesn't even need a description. Just picture this.
Doesn't
person.
Even need a description, okay? And this is what she said.
Are we sure it's a she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at the picture. It's a little hard to tell.
Yeah, it's a little ambiguous. If you're put off by gender distinctions, you may want to leave the podcast.
I was going to say that was kind of a trigger warning. You should.
That was a trigger warning in and of itself.
Oh, exactly. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah.
So this prof finds the Iowa Hawkeye mascot called Herky. She finds Herky to be threatening, to be mean. And here's what she said. She said, quote, "I believe incoming students should be met with welcoming, nurturing, calm, accepting, and happy messages. And our campus community is doing a great job in that regard when it comes to words. However, Herky's angry, to say the least, faces, conveying an invitation to aggressivity and even violence, are not compatible with the verbal messages that we try to convey to and instill in our students and campus community." So there you go, boys.
Is really confusing. Aggressivity a word?
I was going to say, I've never heard that.
I would have gone with aggressiveness.
Yeah.
If I was going to pick a word, maybe this.
Maybe I'm going to start using that word on the rant now. Aggressivity.
Like, here's what she would like.
Aggressivity offends me.
She ends the statement with this. She wants Herky to be, quote, like one of us.
Herky.
Sometimes
jerky.
Sad, sometimes happy, sometimes angry, and sometimes concentrated. So she's calling for a more sort of multifaceted,
a diverse
mascot, a diverse mascot. So sometimes, so let's say I was playing Northwestern on a Saturday afternoon, and sometimes like Sad Herky shows up. You know, he's just a little glum, he's a little morose.
Even though, that's probably more when they're playing like Ohio State.
Because the racial, playing Ohio Western, State.
Racial discrimination against mascots has been gone on for too long, Big T.
It has. It's time somebody said something.
I think there's a bit of a nature question here too, because Herky is a hawk, and so
right?
You know, a bird of prey. If you've ever seen a hawk, they really only have one expression, and it's the one that says, "I want to eat you."
Because that's what they want, right?
Right,
that's,
because they basically are thinking hunt and kill sort of constantly. And I'm curious if this professor realizes that that's sort of the point of a mascot is to generally be sort of an aggressive, fearsome kind of thing, unless you're a Minnesota fan, and then you're a gopher, which is the thing that the hawk eats. And
right.
And actually, the Gophers mascot generally smiles a lot. So maybe she just needs to go work at the University of Minnesota where she can have a smiling rodent.
Or maybe she needs to work in
a
kindergarten. Kindergarten where you can have a happy hawk.
I did like her use of the phrase, "We do this well with our words," because that sounds exactly like a kindergarten teacher. You know, use
That's
your
true.
Words. Don't
do
maybe
scream. Maybe Herky needs to use his words more. Maybe he needs to be a mascot that speaks, that white papers, that conferences. Herky needs to be part of the solution and not just sort of stalking around the sidelines looking all aggressive on Saturday afternoons.
Which would be great, except hawks don't talk.
Maybe
there's the rub, Big R.
Do you think this professor has a full class load? Because I feel like if you have time to be offended by something like this, you probably need a job. Like something to do with your time beyond study the expressions of a fake stuffed animal.
It just seems like now, like we give so much, you know, space for people to be offended. You know, there's like something really interesting about that. I was having a conversation today with somebody about, it's kind of this culture that's always saying, gosh, you know, man, I'm really struggling with things and I really have an issue with that. And this is a really hard time for me. And I'm really offended by that. And I really don't know if I agree. It's like it's impossible for us to agree to disagree anymore. Like they're,
Or we always have to agree to disagree because we can't simply say that's an idiotic thing to be concerned about.
Right, exactly.
Somebody needs to tell this professor, like, that's a dumb thing to be devoting emotion to.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I probably, with trigger warning, sorry, probably just
offended
somebody.
Well, dude, but here's the thing, man. And I'm a football guy, so I own this completely. Like, there are plenty of things about college football to be genuinely mad about, right? Like,
yes.
Starting with the fact that it often makes a mockery of the academic side of your institution, given that like half the guys on the field don't belong there academically. You want to get mad about something, get mad about that, right? Mm. Don't get mad about the expression on the face of Herky, the mascot, you know? So funny, man. I just love it. I wish it was a Portlandia sketch. That's all.
It is a Portlandia sketch. I mean,
in real life.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it really, really is. But I mean, just even on like, I mean, how do you guys experience this though on like a normal, like everyday kind of a level though? Because I feel like it kind of bleeds through. I mean, I'm thinking of like church and I'm thinking of the way people sort of react to things. And I think it's really sort of, it's kind of saturated the culture on a day-to-day level too. You know what I mean? Where everybody has to be so sensitive to everything. It's like this oversensitivity of like American culture, where it's like you can't wait to be oversensitive about something because you get to be, and somebody's going to go, "Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right."
Dude, but it's funny. So the flip side of this, I mean, if you go way on the other side of the continuum, though, is Donald Trump. And none of us want to be that guy. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
No,
so
absolutely.
We're trying to land somewhere in the middle. Like the,
well, there's different flavors of the flip side, though, because isn't Howard Stern on the flip side, too?
And he's
a whole lot smarter than Donald Trump. And I mean, he's not running for president, but wouldn't a lot of stand-up comedians be on that side too? You know, you've got John Mulaney or I don't know, Louis C.K. or somebody, where they pick these things that are offensive and just make a string of progressively more offensive jokes about them, kind of pointing out the fact that like maybe our offense is kind of dumb. And so they make a point through humor. So there's a smart way to do it. And, you know, I'm not really saying you should go listen to those guys, although sometimes there's an element of creative genius in what they do. But, like, Trump is the dumb side of this. I mean, if this professor at Iowa is the dumb extreme on one side, Trump is kind of the dumb extreme on the other side.
But that's interesting what you said, Pipe, because, like, comedians are really the only people that get away with speaking their mind in society. I mean, they can say the most outlandish, racist, you know, kind of because they're trying to be funny, because they're making a joke. Well, they really are the only ones that get away with speaking their mind.
But I mean, so I have an interest in the art of comedy because I'm really interested in figuring out what makes people funny. How do the best people do what they do? So you know, I listen to the Nerdist podcast and some of these, and you hear some of them, and they talk about how they are making a point through jokes. And so yes, there are lowbrow comedians who are just like sex jokes and race jokes and whatever that are just offensive. But then you get some who can take offense and do it with a twist to basically kind of turn the offense on its head. So they're offending people, but by the end the people are laughing at themselves or laughing at their own offense or laughing like at the absurdity of something like racism. And I don't know if it accomplishes anything, like if people walk out of there going, man, I need to think differently about people of a different race. But that aggressive humor is a way to take something like this nonsense about a hawk and just go, this is ridiculous. Because you can rant about it like we are, or you can turn it – you could do it seriously like Portlandia would do, where you express it. You tell a whole story about it, and that kind of turns it on its head in a humorous way.
Yeah, I think it all speaks to just why we need comedy, right? Yes. So whether or not you agree with the comedians, whether or not we champion all of their work, like that function is important. And the ability to have someone in the culture who's still allowed to say that, in a way that I can't say it as a college professor, in a way that you can't say it as a emissary of you know, Lifeway, and Big R can't say it as a pastor. Like somebody needs to be able to, you know, to kind of take the filter off and say some of these things. So
I'd like to see Ronnie try it as a pastor, though. Just get up there and just riff on some of this stuff on a Sunday morning. You know, I know you preach for like 45 or 50 minutes, so you could take 10 or 15 and just riff on trigger warnings and safe places and see how people handle it, Ronnie. Why don't you go?
Yeah, I do my own version of that, so, you know.
Right out of the book of Mark.
You know, just download a sermon every once in a while. I do my version of it, so.
Well, the University of Chicago Boys has done its own version of kind of pushing back against this trigger warning, kind of caveating phenomenon that we've been talking about. University of Chicago, one of the great universities in this country, very highly thought of and respected in the academic community. The headline here is University of Chicago Strikes Back Against Campus Political Correctness. So what they have done, they sent a letter to incoming freshmen. This created a ton of controversy as well, basically saying, look, we're doing away with trigger warnings and safe places on our campus. We're going to treat you like adults and have a great year. So there were people who thought this was pandering to sort of a certain class of donor at University of Chicago. There were other people that thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread. So what do you guys think of this?
Well, I'm looking at their comments right now, or just a section of it, and it says, our commitment to academic freedom means that we do not support so-called trigger warnings. Hallelujah. We do not cancel invited speakers because their topics might prove controversial, and we do not condone the creation of intellectual, quote-unquote, safe spaces where individuals can retreat from ideas and perspectives at odds with their own. To me, this just sounds like what academia is supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it supposed to be a place where...
A marketplace of ideas, yeah, which, you can engage in to whatever degree you want.
I mean, an ignorant bigot is not supposed to be able to survive academia because they're supposed to be confronted with alternative ideas and have those and have that ignorance, sanded down to something else. And safe spaces, as they have come to be, just allow people to kind of own their own version of truth and never be confronted with anything, either intelligently or aggressively.
Hmm.
Big R?
Can we just talk? I mean, can I just say that in the top 20 things of things I care least about, this has to be near the top of it right now? What Pipe said.
Would you, I mean, so you have a 20, is your daughter's 20 or 21, is that right?
21.
Okay, so she was at a college and there was protest, there was something, and they just sort of retreated into their safe spaces, and so you find out, like, there is no interaction of ideas there. There's no people who are, professors who are sort of moderating conversations from both sides of the aisle. There's nothing furthering these 20, 18, 19, 20-year-olds in worldview and observation. Like, as a parent, would you be cool with that? Would you be like, oh, I'm really glad we're spending money on that school. They're doing a bang-up job.
No, I think it just – like what you're describing is it just means that if you have a situation, I think, where a university, kind of comes into that sort of place, then everything just turns into a protest. It's like protest culture then.
Yeah, and then you're protesting protests, and then you're protesting the protesting of protests. That's kind of what's going on here, is like there were protests against certain things, and now the school is trying to squash the serial protesting of everything.
Yeah, and it's just really old and really tired and really ineffective, IMO.
Boys, let's talk about something that Ronnie Martin does care about.
That's a good idea. This is going to get boring otherwise.
I remember a magical breakfast that you and I shared at a Cracker Barrel off the Ohio Turnpike.
Mm. Delicious.
It was delicious.
I can taste the biscuits.
Absolutely. And at that point, Big R, you told me you had just taken a job as a worship leader. And you said, Big T, worship gigs are where rock stars go to die, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one of my earliest Big R memories, fast forward to right now, we are entering the fall, boys. And we're entering a season that I like to call Jared Wilson Twitter season, because he will be – he will be live tweeting every college football game, starting with Eastern Michigan versus Presbyterian on Thursday night. And there's going to be a lot of Jared Wilson Twitter activity.
Clearly rooting for Eastern Michigan because you can't root for Presbyterians.
Exactly.
He works at a Baptist seminary.
Exactly. That's right. So even sussing out the politics behind it. But our boy Jared Wilson did a post on the Gospel Coalition recently that generated some controversy. And it's called Top 10 Things I Wish Worship Leaders Would Stop Saying. So as you think about kind of your traditional worship leader character type, Wilson listed out 10 things that he wished that person would stop saying. He, not surprisingly, got ripped for it. And then he wrote a conciliatory follow-up post about, things that I like about my worship leader or whatever. But I want to go through some of these. Actually, Pipe, why don't you pick out the ones that are most significant for you? Do you have it open in your studio?
I do. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
Let's see. So I would venture to say that it kind of divides into almost halves. And the first half, as you're reading it, is precisely what Ronnie described at that legendary Cracker Barrel breakfast. And it is the things that you would hear from an ex-rock star. And I would say I haven't heard a ton of those, maybe because my church experience doesn't have a ton of those. So the ones that stand out to me as things that absolutely get under my skin when I hear them from the mouth of a worship leader is, Lord, we invite you to be here. That's right up there.
Dude, as though the Lord's just sitting there, like, waiting for the invitation. Yep. Oh, good, I can show up now.
Yeah, also a bit of a lack of understanding of things like omnipresence and the, mm-hmm. you know, the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, those kinds of things. Mm. So I would say that one drives me nuts. And here's the thing. I understand what worship leaders mean by it. They would like to see God do something significant, but that's not that hard to say. God showed up. So if we invited him here, then he showed up. So that's good. He accepted our invitation. He RSVP'd. He arrived on time. And that's good. So those two are right up there. Let's give God a hand. The asking mm. for applause for God. That, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that. Like that, I have always gotten the sense that it's like God needs our affirmation.
Right.
That's
right.
What that feels like to me. And so those three are the ones that are just like, ah, they're the worst.
Here's one that I totally agree with. It was number one on Wilson's list. Turn to your neighbor and fill in the blank. I hate that, man.
Yes.
the sort of meet and greet. It only lasts like a minute and a half, but it feels like it's like 15 minutes of, you know, turning around, someone shaking your hand awkwardly and making a little bit of awkward chit chat, right?
Oh, it's, yeah, those are especially the only thing worse than this is like if they make a guest stand up. Hey, is it your first Sunday here with us? Why don't you stand up so everybody, you know, people around you can greet you? It's more like, why don't you stand up so you can feel incredibly awkward, and then the people around you still won't greet you.
Because does that really happen, though? Yes. I mean, let's not overhype that. Do churches actually do that? Because I've never been to a church that's done that.
Well, you have not been to some of the churches that I have been to. The making guests stand up is a little bit less common. The turn to your neighbor and is the worst. I mean, and it's public speakers do this too. Like, turn to the person on your left and say this. Turn to the person on your right and say this.
Yeah.
I must be really awkward for the people sitting next to me because they turn and they're just like talking to the side of my head.
No, seriously. I want to explore that last one a little bit, Pipe, because I'm not saying it doesn't happen. You know, the thing we were just mentioning, but like when is the last time like that's happened to you? Because I feel like more modern churches are like aware to not do that.
Yeah, it's generally older churches. It's
like if you're new, stand up. I mean, I feel like, man, that's so. I mean, I feel like anybody that was born in the last like 50 years would know not to do that.
Well, you're
right?
Aware that there are a lot of people in church who are over 50, right?
Oh no, I
dude, not at Substance Ashland.
I didn't realize that. Wait a minute, yeah. You mean people over 50 go to church, fellas?
Well, they haven't all died and gone to heaven. So it's definitely those kind of churches. My recollection of those things is probably more from my youth and childhood when I would visit smaller. Especially country or small town churches when my family was on vacation, or in the South when we were visiting relatives and things like that. And so it was always noticeable, you know, when a family of four or five shows up for the first time, and I remember being like an 11, 12 year old kid and standing up because we were summoned to it. Just, it's mortifying, you know. I was already awkward enough to be in a new place. It's hard. It's really hard when they're like, hey, look, new guy.
Big R, how does a piece like this strike you, man, as a former worship guy? And the reason I ask is like the sort of underlying great thing about every Gospel Coalition article is the comment section, yes. Wherein all these like seminary students post their like 4,000 word responses. Well, I take umbrage with point number, you know, 2.5A and you know, and so on in that vein. And there are definitely some people taking umbrage with, you know, with Wilson's piece here, which he caveated right at the beginning, like, hey, this is just meant to be fun. Don't take it too seriously. But
I think it was more. I think it was more Wilson's tone that they were probably taking umbrage at. Wilson's a little complex. You know what I mean? Because he's like a guy that tweets a lot of kind of funny, outrageous things, and he mm-hmm. comes off curmudgeonly sometimes. And sometimes he's so serious, you're like going, wait a minute, is this the same guy? You know? Yeah, so it's like he's real schizophrenic. With his online,
these commenters are some of the. They must be like cousins of the people who ripped El Trogi for his youth group kids post, because the tone of these comments is exactly the same. You know, it's like, have you ever been a worship leader? Blah blah blah. He apparently did not give the proper trigger warning before posting this.
I feel like he did, though. Is the thing? Listen to his trigger warning. in which a crusty old curmudgeon rants a little bit about annoying song leader banter. Don't take this too seriously, except maybe do. Well, all right, yeah. It's a qualified one.
It's a qualifier.
He calls himself
crusty, curmudgeonly, and he says he's ranting, in which...
That's true.
The thing is, like, how... At the risk of insulting all of these commenters, which I'm totally cool with, how dumb do you have to be to not understand jokes?
Yeah, I don't understand.
It's a joke. But
here's the thing. There's no context for jokes on the Gospel Coalition. You know what I mean?
Or maybe this isn't a joke. Is there a context on the internet? Can we do that?
Well, yeah. I mean, look. Yeah. So for TGC, this was a little, you know, this was a little slappy for TGC.
A little far afield.
It was a little flippant. But, you know, here's what's funny is that, like, when, so, you know, kind of the tribal, you know, the tribes I'm coming from, you know, you're not seeing, dude, you're just not seeing worship leaders like fall into these things, right? So you're just like, they're really aware of all of these sort of cliches that have, you know, come down the pike over the past, you know, 20, 30, 40 years. So that stuff is absent. You know, it's absent at our church. It's absent at churches I would go to that you guys would go to. So these are the extension of cliches that have just sort of kind of probably had their sell-by date over time. But yet they're probably still happening in bigger, more, you know, attractional-oriented churches. You know, we're ready to have some fun this morning.
Possibly Wilson may have spoken at like a summer camp. Or something like that, because these sound very campy to me. Like, I'm just going to read through the ones that I didn't hit earlier just for listeners' sake, so they don't actually have to do the work of reading this. For number 10, are we ready to have fun this morning? Number 9, how's everybody feeling? Which is funny, because that's exactly how Matt Chandler starts every sermon.
Right.
How's everybody doing? Number 8, you can do better than that. Number 7, I can't hear you. Number 6...
Dude, wait a minute. We're reformed. We don't care about feelings. He should be like, how's everybody thinking? Right?
How's everybody processing?
Yeah, exactly.
Introducing a hymn. Here's an oldie we dusted off. Number 5, rock and worship. And then the ones that I hit, Lord, we invite you to be here. God showed up. Let's give God a hand. And then Ted's favorite, turn to your neighbor and. So those
it's
first
all
like
youth,
five
it's
or
all
six,
youth camp, yeah.
They all sound like camp to me. And it does. They're kind of ridiculous there too, but I'm reading through the comments right now, and if I go quiet for a little while, these are just mesmerizing.
Oh, they are, man. TGC comments are some of the best entertainment.
I also think that people that are like true fans of TGC are probably not the ones that are, you know what I mean? People that would really buy into the theology behind TGC are probably not the people that are commenting on posts like this, is what I would say.
Right. They're the ones who got, I mean, this thing has been shared 34,000 times on Facebook. Shared or liked, which means that it's looping in people who are not part of the sanctimonious reformed camp, because that camp would 100% agree with all this. They might not realize it's a joke, but they're 100% going to agree with it.
Yeah, it was a little baity. I mean, there's no doubt about
it. Was,
it.
Yeah,
we do,
it was.
We do stuff like this periodically on the Blazing Center, where we'll do a list. I mean, like 14 kids you find in youth group, because sometimes you just have to poke fun at some of the silly things that happen in the church world.
And we get killed for it, by and large.
Yeah, and they drive traffic like bonkers. I mean, we don't lead with this stuff. Most of the posts are pretty, you know, thoughtful and a little bit more serious than this. But we know when we do a post like this, it's going to pop a little bit. And I don't know. It does draw in the people who don't quite know the ethos of the site or the tone of the writer and whatever. But anyway, maybe we should just invite God to show up and move on to something else.
You know what, man? Let me just talk about God showing up, because I feel like there's that gives me sort of a trigger, you know, if I can use that word anymore.
I thought you didn't care about that.
You know, I kind of don't, except for the fact that, man, you know, there's one phrase that God showed up reminds me of, and I literally almost feel like it's heretical, is when people say, I think it was a God thing, man. It was a God thing.
Oh,
it's so funny. And so I always suggested that as a topic for this podcast. The using God as an adjective. It's a God thing. Mm-hmm. It was a God conversation.
So I always pause when they say that, and I always feel like I'm being the curmudgeon. But I've gotten so intolerant of that phrase, I just can't resist anymore. And I always stop and I go, Dude, do you really believe there's anything in this world that isn't a God thing if you believe he's sovereign? I mean, I get all theological, you know, but like it like drives me up the wall. Like, dude, it was a God thing as opposed to that other thing that happened outside of his like sovereign will. And I know we're getting super reformy right now, but like at the same time.
I'm feeling like I needed a trigger warning, a theological trigger warning.
But it's like it's an absurd statement to make in its offense.
It's funny. I would have been a lot more shallow about it and just been like, it's like using the word great to describe things. Find better adjectives. Describe the thing that happened in a way that actually says something about God. If it's a God thing, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, say something that means a thing. You know, if God made a situation happen that was a blessing, that was unexpected, that there's no other way it could have happened, then say that.
But that's every situation, unfortunately.
Right, but our recognition of it is notably lacking most of the time. And so, but to me, I just hear God thing, or I saw somebody post and they're like, it was a real God conversation. And like, God is not an adjective. Say a thing about God if that's what you're trying to say.
Dude, we're getting really reformed podcast right now. Let's move on, Big G.
Good call. Moving on.
Baby, we don't have a lot of time. I have to go and coach a football practice. But the last topic, it's one that I feel like we've covered a lot. And it's one that, Pipe, I dare say, this may need a trigger warning for Big R. I feel like it's been a tough ep for Big R. I feel like Big R felt a little bit attacked by the worship leader thing. And I feel
baby,
like
you know that's not true. You know that's not true. Come
baby,
on.
I am guarding your heart and your emotions.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. Guarding your heart.
You about guard to ask him out?
Hold on. I'm gonna add that. I'm gonna put that as like 1B on Wilson's like top 10. Guarding your heart.
No, that's in the top 10 things I wish people would quit saying about dating.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So the last topic, and we got to be quick here. This was Pipes. Why must hipsters gourmet everything?
Did we cover that already? I
feel like this has come up a lot, but mac and cheese, grilled cheese, burgers, and sausages. So taking things that are manifestly lowbrow or not gourmet and having to gourmet them. And again, Big R, I don't want this to hurt you. I don't want this to be said in anger, but I'm going to ask you this, and we're going to close on this. What was the most sort of hipstery thing in this genre that you ate when you were in Asheville? Because I know you did. Okay. I know you had food like this.
Absolutely.
So, something that
I'm going to tell you.
I'm going to tell you right now.
You don't have to say another word. Do not even speak another word until I tell you what this is.
Bum's the word, baby. Go.
And it was simply this, a maple bourbon donut. That was it right there.
Oh, Jesus.
A maple bourbon donut. And let me just.
Of course, it was a maple bourbon donut.
And let me just say it was obviously
a maple bourbon cronut.
No, it was not a cronut. Okay. This place was too old school for cronuts. They were all trying to do all this new school Pirates of the Caribbean like kind of stuff, man. This was simply you go into this place called The Hole. You order a donut. They make it for you on the spot. So it's individual. Every donut's made individual on the spot. And they have their.
It costs like $16.
It costs $23 per donut.
Exactly.
And, because of that, we only ordered six.
Uh-huh. So, half a dozen. Good.
And then you hitchhiked back.
We hitchhiked back because there's a lot of hippies there. So we're just standing in a long line of people with their thumbs up, right? And
hitchhiking is vintage. It's hipster.
Oh, it's hipster.
You're good there.
So, man, so let me just tell you that I took a bite of this donut, and I'm not going to lie, fellas. It was the greatest experience that I have ever had in my life, man.
Oh, Judas. I reject
dude,
that.
It was worth every dime of that
$23. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. And I'm just talking about the plain. I just ordered the plain maple, man, and it was divine, man.
Now, baby, what did you drink with this Urban Outfitters maple Pirates of the Caribbean bourbon donut that you
obviously
had?
I ordered a $16.25 pour over. Obviously.
Of course.
With a side of raw goat's milk.
Well, let's not be ridiculous now. I mean, it was young calf's milk.
Ronnie, one more question. Did you photograph the maple bourbon donut before you ate it? And post it to Instagram?
I mean, I posted a picture of the hole, but I didn't post any pictures of the donuts. But you know what? I got them, and I'm going to post them now that you reminded me.
What was the surface that you ate it off of? Distressed barn door or sheet metal?
It was distressed. It was aged barrel.
Yeah, it was aged
like
barrel.
It was like a table surface.
Yes, of course. Sure, it was repurposed barrel.
It was a bourbon barrel.
Like I still have splinters in my mouth right now. I mean that was part of the experience. Like
it was
chewing
a repurposed
splinters
bourbon barrel.
It was.
That was part of the flavor.
That's part of the flavor.
Of course.
Don't you feel like we've been to this place? You know what I mean? Even though we haven't.
I think I go there every week and I've never been to Asheville.
Exactly. Yeah. You go there every week, meaning downtown Nashville.
Yeah,
anywhere.
East Nashville, West yeah. Nashville. Just
Nashville, Asheville. It doesn't matter.
I know. Take or leave the end. It's all the same. It's wood splinters and maple donuts.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What is life if not wood splinters and maple donuts?
Well, that is my life, boys. That is my life. That's the life I lead. I know. And in between all of that, I prepare
It's Peruvian pour overs.
It's Peruvian pour overs. Absolutely,
dude. Can we cue this up for another app? I feel like I am showing my ignorance here, but I feel like this is, again, a safe place. I don't even fully know what the H you're talking about when you say pour over.
All right, so what we'll do is...
Don't you pour the whole... all coffee is a pour
easy,
over, right?
Go slow, Big T.
I'm adding this to the list for a future episode.
In fact, we just want you to. It's almost going to be like we don't even do an intro in the next step. You're just literally going to pick up where we left off, Big T. How about that?
I just want a seminar on this. I want this explained to me in explicit detail.
Absolutely. And as soon as you're ready to spend $30 to $40 per cup of coffee, you'll be able to experience in your hometown.
Okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to start saving, and then by next week, I'll have enough saved up to go buy a pour over.
Baby, if me and B Pipe pitch in, do you think that would give you enough money to go buy a pour over this week?
Baby, listen, I don't want you buying
sponsor.
Nobody buys my pour overs. Okay, I'm too proud.
The other question is, will you have enough time? Because a pour over takes approximately 27 times longer than an average coffee at a coffee.
Pipe, you could have said 27 minutes. That would have been accurate. That's accurate.
Dude, you guys, you want to know something that really happened? I was in a coffee shop recently, and I ordered a certain kind of coffee, and the girl goes, "Oh, it's, you know, I just want to let you know that's going to have to be a pour over."
Yeah,
I didn't know what she was talking. I just acted like I knew.
Yeah, and I know you were at Starbucks, weren't you, Big T?
I was at Starbucks.
She said we don't have it drip. We just have to give it a pour over.
It's gonna have to be a pour. I'm like, you know, do what you got to do,
Big T.
Right?
Just calm down, relax. Try to get some composure, and we'll explain it to you next time.
I got to try to get some sleep between now and next week.
It's going to be tough, isn't it?
Did you some point go back up to the counter and ask them what was taking so long with your coffee?
No, man. I mean, I did the thing that you do at Starbucks, which is stand there awkwardly until some college kid gets up, and then you can have a place to sit. You know, and by then, like, the thing was ready. But
gotcha.
I don't know. It was stressful, man. It was stressful. I'm just glad I have you guys. I'm glad I have people in my life. I can be candid and authentic.
Can I pray for that right now, Big T?
Can we invite God into this conversation about pour overs?
You guys, this is a God thing, this conversation. Oh, my goodness. Boys, we have wandered to and fro, which is exactly what we do on each and every episode. If you're one of our 30,000-plus listeners per month, you know that we do this, and you love us for it. So until next time, boys, Rachel the Held Evans.
Have you ever considered yourself a messenger? Whether it's mics like this, bookshelves around the world, stages to take, or art to make, or perhaps businesses to build, it's time we start testifying truth unashamedly, creatively, and in love. My name is Tamara Andress, the host of the Messenger Movement podcast, which is designed to catalyze Christians to speak, write, build, and testify. If you're ready to turn your message into a movement and want to run with other messengers doing the thing at scale globally, search and follow the Messenger Movement podcast on your favorite podcast platform today or lifeaudio.com.